Happy Sabbath, everyone. It's good to see you all. I've been here for about 8 minutes, maybe 12, I don't know. And so my attitude's starting to get better already. My blood pressure's going down. The griders are probably coming from the same direction, so they understand. And I know coming through that traffic was about an hour extra travel time today, so that's all right. It's good to be here. What are all these people doing on Saturday? They're not going to church, evidently. They're going shopping or something. Speaking of shopping, I went this week to a bookstore and I asked the person if they could direct me to the self-help section, and she says, "If I told you that, it would defeat the purpose." Ooh, she said, ooh, that's a bad one. Well, the topic I want to discuss today is one I've talked about and spoke on before. But as I was preparing and trying to decide on what to give a sermon on, it seemed several times in the last week I kept hearing about this particular topic. It was on the news, different commentators talking about it, had people at work discussing it in more than one occasion, and I've even heard the conversations here at services in the last couple weeks. So I want to look at the same topic just from a different angle, I think, because it's something that is important to all of us. You see, in this world of greed and corruption and evil in many forms, and a world that is one centered basically on the way of get, respect is becoming rare, or I should say becoming more rare. And this is something that we as God's people, I think, struggle with at times. There were some people on the way up here today that weren't very respectful as I was trying to merge. And I tried to be respectful back, but I had a little trouble with that. But I'm working on that. But I know what God expects of me, even in those situations. And I think we all do. I think at times we understand that we are also not as respectful as God expects us to be. For those of you in the room old enough, you remember the comedian Rodney Dangerfield. He made a living with his famous statement, "I don't get no respect." And perhaps one of the reasons many found this statement humorous over the years, and he actually kept getting paid to say that, is that respect is so woefully lacking in the modern America. I think we could spend just an inordinate amount of time talking about different examples of disrespect, because they're just endless. You know, from a children's behavior in school or at home to cartoons, political cartoons that get people upset, to the politicians we see on television, to the newscasters being disrespectful to folks, to the way people dress for church or other formal occasions, to the way we treat each other in all situations. I mean, we could cast an awfully broad net as we discuss the examples of disrespect. But I do believe, as I talk to folks, that many people today don't even know what respect truly is. They've not been brought up in those ways. Their parents didn't teach them. So I think people just don't understand, let alone understand why it's important. In the dictionary, one of the best definitions I found described respect, is to consider worthy of high or special regard. I liked that definition. It also had a reference that says it refers to a mental outlook that affects how we live our lives and what we say and what we do. One of the most important lessons of our Christian life is the fact that we are all in varying degrees products of the age that we live in. I'm with people a lot, you know, in different situations, and they say, "Boy, if I'd have done that when I was growing up, things would have been different." And we see that a lot. It's just a different age. But we've also talked about over the years that the church kind of parallels society at times, and we become more lax at times than we have been in the past, just because, you know, society around us unfortunately does affect us. And I hope that everyone in this room is trying to live a life that is more pleasing to God every day, and I think you probably are doing that. You see, as we're all struggling to do that, it behooves us to consider the importance of respect and how to maintain respect in every single area of our lives. One of the things I'm going to say today, the object of my sermon isn't to give you a specific list of do's and don'ts. It's more to help us understand the principle of respect. And I think from there, if we can grasp that fully, that we'll be so much better off. The temple that I'm going to use in the sermon today as we talk about respect is simply the Ten Commandments. We've gone through those recently as one of the sermons. And we understand that the first four, as we talk about that, the first four commandments specifically address respect for God. You see, we have to get this right. If we can't get that right, we are lost. We have to consider God as worthy of the highest and the most special regard at all times and in all situations. What does that mean? I'm not meaning that we take that, you know, yeah, I do want to treat him special because he's a kind of a special guy. We can't have that approach. It has to be more sincere than that. It has to be deeper than that. You know, all situations, even when you smash your finger with a hammer, or that guy doesn't let you cut in traffic, your thoughts, everything has to be respectful to God. We have to consider God as worthy of the highest and the most special regard at all times and all situations. As a matter of fact, if we look at the first two commandments, we won't turn there, we've been through them, but he commands that of us to put anything or anyone before God is blatant disrespect for him. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 6, please, as we start to dig into this from a little bit different angle than we've looked at in the past. Deuteronomy 6, let's read verses 4 through 7. I'm reading from the New King James Version. It says, in verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart." That should be bolded in our Bibles. "With all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." Not some, not when it's convenient. He says all, everything. We have to give it everything we have. Going on, it says, "And these words which I command you," again, not asking us. God the Father is commanding us to do this. "They shall be in your heart." Not just when we think about it, it has to be at our very core of who we are. It says, verse 7, "You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." Basically saying, all day, every day. And I don't think I do that nearly to the level that I need to. We get caught up in all the pulls of life and all the stuff. We're busy. And we let that slip away. But that's not what God tells us we must do. I mentioned, you know, hitting your finger with a hammer, you know, taking God's name in vain is a very simple and unfortunately very common sign of disrespect towards God. The Jewish Study Bible said this one comment. It said, "Even someone who would take a false oath would show contempt for God by implying that the swearer does not fear God's punishment." You know, I affirm, I'll tell the truth, you know, but They aren't scared of God. They have no fear for Him. They have no respect for Him. What about the Sabbath day? You see, we have to get the Sabbath, to get that the Sabbath day is not just a day of rest. That's part of it. And God planned that for us. He knew what we needed. But it's a day, also a day to show honor and respect to God. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 58, please. Isaiah 58, verse 13, says, "If you turn your foot away from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, not finding your own pleasure, not speaking your own words." The Tanakh says, if you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, it's like, again, just to think about just disrespect. We do respect in general. There are things that we just are kind of ingrained in us, hopefully. Like if you walk into somebody's house, you got muddy feet, and they have new carpet, hopefully you take off your shoes, you know? We have to understand that in all areas of our lives, we have to have respect. We're to honor God in special ways on His holy day. Not just bless Him with our presence here. That's not enough. The Net Bible version has Isaiah 15, verse 13 as this. It says, "You must observe the Sabbath rather than doing anything you please on my holy day. You must look forward to the Sabbath and treat the Lord's holy day with respect. You must treat it with respect by refraining from your normal activities and by refraining from your selfish pursuits and from making business deals." So basically we're talking about three categories, right? Refraining from normal activities, refraining from selfish or personal pursuits, you know, doing your own thing. And three, talking about those things. I struggle with that myself. You know, we get together with folks I haven't seen in a week. We try to catch up. And we talk about lots of things. I'm not saying that that's not okay, but that can't be our only conversations. Turn back to Deuteronomy 6. Verses 5 and 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 5, as we consider this concept of the Sabbath and how we treat God on the Sabbath, how we think about that. Deuteronomy 6, verse 5, it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today, loving God shall be in your heart, shall be written on your heart." Matthew 12, verse 34. We're going to just hit several scriptures here because we could spend so much time on just one specific point. I wanted to cast a little bit broader net to get us to think about this. Matthew 12, verse 34. It says, "Brood of vipers, how can you being evil, speak good things? For out of abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." The New Living Translation put it this way, "Whatever is in your heart determines what you say." So what are you thinking? What's in your heart? That's what your conversation is going to be. What's going to follow from that? Turn back a page. Well, actually, we'll just go on to verse 35. It says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word men speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. I've been accused at times of speaking before I think. And I'm trying to get better at that. But obviously I need to get it right, because I'm going to be judged on every word that comes out of my mouth. As God tells us there. And again, we're not going to talk about a specific list of do's and don'ts. Oh, you can talk about this, but not this. And that's not the idea. It's the general principle that we want to get across, and then let you determine how you can implement that best in your life. But the principle of the Sabbath, again, is to honor God by making the Sabbath a special day. Not just a day of rest for us, but a special day. A day of refraining from our normal activities, of concentrating instead on activities and conversations that show respect for God, that show honor for God. And conversations and activities that help us draw closer to Him and to try to truly appreciate what He does for us. The fact He called us out of the billions of people in the world, all those people in that traffic jam, He called us. Turn over to 1 Corinthians, please. We'll look at some more examples here. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Different just one example of respect as we talk about this. 1 Corinthians 11 verse 4 is one of them I selected. It says, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. I found that intriguing. I did a little digging around. And several different resources said this might be the origin of a long-standing tradition in our culture for men to remove their caps or hats to show respect. Which makes sense. You know, we take it off during the national anthem or different things. But bowing the head and kneeling are also gestures of respect. Public prayer, except obviously during private prayers during ordination or blessing of children or Passover, but most of the time we stand and bow our heads for prayer. Take off, you're at somebody's house, you know, Thanksgiving, everybody gather around, we're going to say a prayer. Everybody takes their hats off and then puts it back on and go watches the football game. But yeah, people, that's a sign of respect, what they're trying to do. Let's turn to Matthew 22. Another example. Let's read the principle of the wedding garment really here in Matthew 22, starting in verse 2. We'll read verses 2 through 14. It says, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call on those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. And again, he sent out other servants saying, tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his own business farm and another to his business. And the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. Verse 7, when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, and burned up the city. And then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both bad and good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. And so he said to him, "Friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment?" And he was speechless. Then the king said to the servant, "Bind him hand and foot, take him away and cast him into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." Now, obviously, this parable has other significant meaning, but the meaning that I want to specifically talk about then, again, the main purpose or meaning of this lesson is not how to dress, but it does show a biblical precedent for attire, for proper attire. Our culture has gone from one extreme to another on this. Just think back, many of us, when we were children. You know, back when I was a kid, if your jeans had holes in them, you weren't leaving the house with that. You know, or if your clothes were all tore up, you find them missing. You could go out and play, but if you're going to town or something, they just weren't allowed. Think back in the early United States, men wore suits, and they wore ties, and they wore hats, and the women wore dresses, and they wore bonnets. Basically everywhere they went, even at play. Again, the trend today is very casual, and you see a lot of jeans with holes. The more holes, the better. You know, some people I know have nieces and nephews, they get new jeans and they put holes in them because that's what's cool. I have staff that come to work that way and I send them home. Go put on some proper clothes. You know, that's not how we work. That's not what we do. There's an article that was published in January of this year, and it's called "Dress for Respect" by Irene Taylor. I want to read it to you. It says, "The clothes we wear may not make the man, but they make a definite statement about our attitude towards self and others. Business leaders recognize this and emphasize the importance of dressing for success. The way we present ourselves reflects our attitude toward life in general. We have become so casual in our dress, we think casually about events toward which respect should be shown. A lax dress code shows a lack of respect," she says. Going on, it says, "There was a time when Christians knew that there was to be a difference in our manner of dress from that of the world. Christians believed the wisdom of 1 Timothy 2:9, where it says, 'In like manner also the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety.'" She goes on to say, "Christian women dressed modestly, attractively, and femininely when in public and were treated with respect. Their demeanor in turn showed respect for the occasion. This was especially true of such occasions such as worship services, weddings, and funerals. Alas," she says, "such is not true today." Going on in the article, she says, "While on a trip some time back, we attended worship service at two different congregations. At the morning service, I found myself one of three or four ladies in a dress. At the evening service, I was the only lady so attired. Imagine feeling so conspicuous in a dress at a worship service. The attire of the women was not even a nice pantsuit, but rather ultra-casual attire one might wear to the ballpark. Some were dressed in the same manner as that formerly worn by women working in the field. And this was true of both the older and younger women. The attire was not due to a need for warmth. The season was summertime. The slogans on some of the shirts were not appropriate for home, let alone for church service, designed to honor and pay respect to God. It was not surprising that the conduct during service fell short of respect for the God of heaven." She goes on to say, "There is a principle portrayed in a beautiful hymn which used to be sung frequently in their service, and it was entitled, 'Give the best to your master.'" Obviously, these people aren't in our church, but I love the article. She goes on to say, "This song suggests a standard which needs to be revived today. Our casual attitude toward things sacred has infiltrated more than our dress. The best that we have in dress should display the respect of self and others. Too often we dress more appropriately for weddings and funerals than for our worship to the God of to the Creator of this world. The former is to honor a human, the latter is to pay homage to God. Who among us would be appear in the presence of a ruler of any nation in the same attire somewhere in the worship assembly? And finally, the last part of this says, many businesses have a strict dress code, and employees know they must conform or be fired. Elders should not have to instigate a dress code, but we obviously need to be reminded that our appearance does matter. Can you visualize the uproar that would be caused if elders announced a dress code for worship? And in the past, we've had articles that talk about this is how people should dress more modestly. And there are folks that don't believe that, and they get upset by that. Finally, the last part says, it is odd we would honor regulations set by a business and be offended when we ask to dress properly on the street and especially in worship. She says, finally, may the day return when all Christians dress properly when they come forward to worship their God. And I thought that was very good. I have friends that go to other churches, and here a while back I had one that was running late, and I saw him. We were out at the archery range, and he had to go change his clothes. I thought, oh, he's going to see him all dressed up. You know, he was an usher that day even, and I'm trying not to demean him at all, but he came out and he had a clean t-shirt on and clean jeans, and he was ready to go. And that's okay in their church. So it's a lack of respect as we understand it. I was looking back here a while back too in Mr. Armstrong's autobiographies, and I remember a story from there where there was the daughter of the former owner of Belknap Springs. I don't know if you remember the story, but he had one suit. Mr. Armstrong talked about this, and as he related it, it may have even had several holes in it, but that one suit that this man had was always clean and always pressed. It was the best he had. We talk about then the last six commandments involve respect for our fellow human beings. The first of the second set, the fifth commandment, deals directly with the respect of children for parents. And I think that's interesting that this should come first. That is the first one. You see, respect for God and fellow human beings is a concept that parents are supposed to be instilling in their children. We see situations where that doesn't happen as much as it used to at times. Again, I take you back to Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 7. We read it earlier, but it says again, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. Finally, verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Those of you who spend any time in the last 15 years or 20 in the public schools, it's a place that I don't want to teach in the public schools. I have my master's in education, and that's not a place I want to be. I would rather I work with the special ed children who oftentimes have much more respect for people than do their non-disabled counterparts. But the children don't have it today for the teachers. They can say anything they want. They don't have it for their parents. They don't have it for their fellow students. And how has that slipped in society? How have we allowed that to go? We understand that parents, they need to begin by teaching their children the Ten Commandments. An unlikely source, J. Edgar Hoover, said this. He said, "A child who has been taught to respect the law of God, the laws of God, will have little difficulty respecting the laws of man." I found that very interesting, which is true. If you understand, if you have some morality, you value those commandments, you're not going to have so much trouble in life. Looking at the sixth commandment quickly, it involves the respect for human life, that thou shalt not murder. Number seven requires respect for our mate in marriage. And again, this is a parental example. It's vital in this situation. It's a vital part of that teaching role. Number nine requires having a special regard for the truth. And children, again, must be taught the importance and the value of the truth. Not a truth or someone's idea of the truth, but what is the truth? And why is it the truth? And obviously, commandments number 8 and number 10 deal with the respect for what belongs to someone else. If it's not yours, leave it alone. Don't take it. If you borrow it, return it. Let's look at a few more examples of how to show respect in some other areas of life. Turn back to Romans chapter 13, please. Romans 13 talks about here, we'll read, just in general, respect for authority. The society we live in is a culture in which disrespect for authority is rampant. And some people disrespect the person in charge before they even know it, just because they are authority. Before they even get to know them or whatever. Romans 13, verse 1. As we talk about respect for authority, here's one example. Pay everyone what is owed. Taxes to whom taxes are due. This is in the New Living Translation. Revenue to whom revenue is due. Respect to whom respect is due. Honor to whom honor is due. Nowhere does it say that we can be disrespectful to anyone, let alone someone who God has allowed to be in authority. Doesn't mean we have to agree with everything they say, but we have to be respectful. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 1. First Timothy 5 verse 1 is another example. It says, "Do not speak harshly to an older man," or in some cases it says, "Do not rebuke an older man, but speak to him instead," it says, "as to a father, to younger men as brothers, to older women as mothers, to younger women as sisters, with absolute purity." It reminds me of something, again, I've had a discussion with a few people, and this is my opinion. Yeah, maybe I'm old school, but even referring to our pastor by his first name. I had a conversation with some folks when we were in La Crosse, several of them, and they'd recur to Mr. Myers all the time as Steve. One guy even called him, "Hey, Stevie boy." I'm going, and maybe it's not as a big deal as it is to me, but where I come from and where I was taught is that we call our pastors Mr. Myers, Mr. Dowd. They are God's ordained. They're no better than us, we understand, but they're ordained by God to an office. And it's respectful to refer to them as Mr. or Mrs. Think of teachers. When's the last time you call your high school teacher or whatever you call them by their first name? We don't. We refer to them as Mr. or Mrs. Again, it's a sign of respect. Let's turn back to Exodus 20 as another example here. Exodus 20 and verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. The New Living Translation says, Honor your father and mother, then you will live a long, full life in the land the Lord your God is giving you. This is, again, coming back, this is where children learn respect for God and for adults by being taught to respect their parents. Ephesians 6:2, you can write it down, but it says, Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you, and you will have a long life on the earth. That's in the New Living Translation. But to all of us as children, this is written for us. Verse 4, again reading out of the New Living Translation. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way that you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. So again, it's telling us here, respect sons, fathers, mothers, daughters. It's a two-way street. We have to treat our children with respect. That's how they learn respect. But it also, this emphasizes the importance of parental involvement and instruction and discipline as necessary to help form the values of children. And again, that includes the value of respect. Turn back to Ephesians chapter 5. The Bible also emphasizes, we'll see, mutual respect in all relationships. In all relationships. The NIV says here in Ephesians 5, verse 21, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. See, authority isn't about personalities. It's about respecting God's authority vested in fallible human instruments. We are all heirs. God's called every single one of us. We're going to be kings and priests. How can we ever disrespect each other? Look over a couple verses here. Ephesians 5:33, it says, Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. It's all laid out here. God tells us this, and we know it. But we let that human nature that Mr. Gitter mentioned, it affects us all. It affects us. It affects our attitude at times. It affects how we treat others, how we think about others. None of us, unfortunately, are immune to that. Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 9, we won't read it, but it talks about the employer-employee relationship. Talks about in those verses the teacher-student relationship. And it talks about, of course, in church, the pastor and the congregation relationship. Turn back to 2 Kings. 2 Kings, we're going to see here, is that it's going to start just showing us the example of respect for the property of others. You know, a common trend in society today is to respect and take care of one's own property, but trash someone else's. And you throw your bag of garbage out the window, you're usually not in your own yard. It's in somebody else's yard, right? Or rental homes versus people who own their own homes. You own your own home, you probably take a little bit of care of it is the common thread. Rental homes, you hear every day from people who are owners of those homes, that they're just trashed. People tear them up. 2 Kings 6, verse 5. says, I'll read this out of the Net Bible. It says, as one of them was felling a log, the axe head dropped into the water, and he shouted, oh no, my master, it was borrowed. He was worried because it wasn't his axe. Today what we'd hear is, whew, at least that wasn't mine. Right? That's society today. You can write down Philippians 2, verse 4. As we talk about respect for the property of others, it says, each of you should be concerned not only about your own interests, but about the interests of others as well. Right? It's not about what can I get? It's all about me. We have to be concerned for others. We have to show our concern for others. Turn back to Luke 16, verse 10. Because at times, you know, I've had conversations with folks and they go, you know, really, that's, you're getting a little, you know, you're being too picky about something. And maybe I am at times. But Luke 16, verse 10. Means a lot. It says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. The New Living Translation says this about verse 10. It says, if you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. So we got to sweat the small stuff. We have to consider that, again, at all times. It has to be in our hearts, in our minds, everything that we do. Verse 12, drop on down to verse 12 in Luke 16. It says, and if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? Or the New Living Translation, I like it. It says, and if you are not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? Again, something that parents do for children. We teach them at home, for example, keeping their room clean. Or taking care of their toys or whatever. We teach that to our children. I had some friends when I was growing up. I liked them a lot. But they had no respect for their stuff or anyone else's. And they had these wonderful grandparents who, if they broke their brand new motorcycle, they'd buy them another one. But they had the same attitude if they were on yours. And they broke it. They're like, eh. And then they go get on theirs and ride off. They just didn't respect that. They didn't take care of it. Turn back to Genesis 2. How about just talking about respect for the creation, for God's creation. Genesis 2, verse 15. Then the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and to keep it. We have here mankind's first recorded task was to take care of God's creation. The first thing he was instructed to do that we understand, the first recorded task. Here again, think about that. Mankind has gone from one extreme to another. We have now vast parts of our forests being clear cut and the slaughtering of all the hundreds of thousands, millions of buffalo that we had to now what we used to refer to as probably not very respectful as tree huggers, you know, are those refusing to eat meat. We have both ditches there. We have from an utter disregard and disrespect for the environment to the worship, if you will, of creation. But if we look at that and just try to be in the middle of the road where God wants us to be, He expects us to respect and take care of our property and that of others. He expects us to have respect for and to care for the environment. We don't throw our stuff out the windows. We know that. We take care of it. This is God's creation. God wants us to treat His creation with respect. Let's look at a couple more examples. Turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Here it talks about basically respect for our bodies. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 19. It says, "Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own?" Think about that. The fact that we are not our own means that our bodies belong to God. And we've heard that in years past. You know, people say, why you shouldn't smoke or why you shouldn't do this. It belongs to God. It's a temple. Let's look at just one final point here. And it brings us back full circle. Turn back to Romans 13. I mean, bring us back to full circle. It brings us back to talking about respect for God. We have to remember at all times, in our hearts, in our minds, in everything we do, that everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. And what we've talked about all comes back to showing respect for Him. Romans 13 and verse 1. It says, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God." I don't always have respectful thoughts against some of our government officials, but I have to remember when I see some of the things they're doing is that God allowed them to be in charge. I don't have to agree with what they're saying, but I have to respect the office because God allowed that. Verse 2, "Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, for it, being authority, is a minister," or servant, if you will, "of God to you for good." One last scripture. Psalm 24. As we start to conclude here. Psalm 24. And verse 1. It's in here somewhere. There we go. Psalm 24 and verse 1, I'll read this out of the New Living Translation. It says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all its people belong to Him." So I hope that you can see, hopefully even a little bit more clear, the importance and the value that God places on respect. And showing either respect or disrespect for anything or anyone is in reality showing respect or disrespect for God Himself. And I'm going to leave it to every one of you as individuals to determine how to show respect in just those few categories that we've discussed today and so many others that you'll be able to think of. Finally, let's not forget what God expects of us when it comes to respect.